Welcome to a Sober Girls Guide podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on sobriety and recovery. I'm your host and sober girl, Jessica Jabot. Inspired by my own sobriety and wellness journey, I want to spread the wealth of knowledge. Tune in each week for uncensored conversations about mental health, self-development, wellness and spirituality, and how they influence each guest's unique recovery journey. My goal is to educate and inspire and to let you know you are not alone on your recovery journey. Thanks so much for tuning in to a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Let's go! Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 243 of a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Rachel is sober in Central Park, literally. She is here to share her journey of sobriety, and her story will melt your heart. Rachel explains how simple, structured tasks throughout her day made it easier to change her relationship with alcohol. We are excited to welcome Rachel as a new addition to our coaching team. She can be found Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time in the Sober Girl Social Club. This is such a great episode. Let's get into it. Rachel, what's up? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I am ready to just take a break and relax and restore for the holiday season. What about yourself? I bet New York is just gorgeous right now.
It is, except there's no snow. And today it's 60 degrees. So it's a little warm. Yeah, it's kind of weird. So, you know, the leaves are still on the trees. So it's kind of confusing. You know, you think of New York at the holidays with the snow and it's cold, and it's just not like that.
But New York, usually you're bundled up, walking around, you know, looking at all the windows and the lights and all the tree lighting. Oh my God, so beautiful. But now you're just doing it with like a lighter coat. So that's cool.
Exactly. And swarms of people. I don't know if you've seen any of the videos, like reels circulating online, but there's these crowds come and you can't even move. You're just like packed like a little sardine in there. No. And maybe you can. Yeah. I mean, it's really scary. People, it's like what you think you're coming to. And it's like the beautiful sounds of like people ice skating, and then what it's really like. And people are like standing there. It's intense. You have to be ready for it.
It's like Japan. You're just like packed into like a commuter train, just like stuffed.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
You know? Talk about anxiety.
Seriously. I used to work right by the tree, like in a past. And when I was in the before sobriety days. And so I was already mad at the world, and then having to go through that crowd after work during rush hour. I mean, it was the worst thing ever. I definitely don't miss those days.
Dead. I was already mad at the world. Love that. Speaking of your before sobriety days, I want to get into like coaching. I know you're a new coach that is coming into our circle, our Sober Girl Social Club membership. You're going to be doing Wellness Wednesdays on Wednesday
afternoon. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But I want to get a little background. You know, our coaches are there, they're holding space for our members, and we rarely get to hear their kind of story or how they came to sobriety. So I would love to hear about your BS, your before sobriety Rachel.
Ooh, before sobriety Rachel. she was a totally different person. You know, sometimes I speak to people who get sober, and things change, but they're pretty much still like the same person. I would say I'm a totally unrecognizable human, outside, inside, in every possible way. The before sobriety Rachel was just, she was fun, I guess you could say, but she was angry, and she was hurt, and she was really depressed and sad and hopeless. And I honestly didn't really think I'd make it past the age of 32, 33. Like, it was really dark, I could say. That's the word to describe it, dark. I was constantly just looking for the party to numb, to escape. I had such bad anxiety that I literally couldn't do things by myself. Like, to the point where I got paranoia. It hurt all the time in my chest. And I would I would just stay on the path that I knew no matter what. I never ventured a toe out of the comfort zone because I was terrified of what would happen. And I was in a relationship that I got in a very weird time in my life. And I stayed in, even though I knew it wasn't right, because mm-hmm. I was so codependent. And I'm pretty sure that, because I knew I was unhappy already. And that, I think, also led me to continue to fuel my numbing, because I didn't see a way out. So I think back to her a lot. And most of the time when I post on Instagram, I'm speaking to her. Like, what could have helped her if she was just scrolling and saw something? Like, what might have made a little bit of a difference? But yeah, I mean, everyone, including me, we're scared for my life, like, all the time.
Wow. When did that fear really start? Like, can you pinpoint when, you know, when the anger ramped up, when the fear really came into play?
Yeah, I mean, I think the anger and the anxiety started really early. It started, honestly, the first time I drank. Because the first time I drank, I was young. It was the summer before my freshman year in high school. And that same day, I lost my virginity, not planned. And the whole school found out. My entire school. And everyone talked about it. And someone called my mom about it. She read my diary. I mean, it was really traumatic. Yeah. And that was the beginning of, my parents got divorced like a month later. And it was, I honestly, at that point, people had rumors about me, like, you know, and I kind of then was like, you know what? I'm going to play into the rumors. If they want to say that, you know, I'm the party girl, I'm the fast girl, whatever, I'm just going to be that girl. Like, why even try to be something different? So that started young. And then I went to boarding school because I was getting into trouble, and my mom sent me to boarding school. Okay. And that helped because I got diagnosed with ADHD.
In boarding school.
In boarding school.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did that diagnosis help you?
It changed my life. I mean, it really explained why because I was a repeat sophomore in boarding school, because I basically had stopped going to school my sophomore year. Okay. And it really explained, like, why I couldn't pay attention, why I had emotional outbursts, why a lot of the things that I had always gotten in trouble for, talking too much in class, like, you know, but still really performing well on tests. So I got put on medication, and my whole world changed. So that was a big positive. And for a while, I think everyone was like, oh, she's fine now.
Right. But only medication, like, it only helps like a tiny piece of the puzzle.
Totally. And I was also in a very, very like disciplined, rigid rules. Like, we were always being watched environment. Mm. So it was kind of hard to get into trouble. Like, you know, I wasn't going to get kicked out of school, but yeah. So for the rest of high school, it was okay. I wasn't, you know, able to really like binge drink or do anything crazy. Right. But then I got to college. And that
I love how you said, I wasn't able to binge drink or do anything crazy just because you were being babysat. Like, if you weren't, and you were like, you know, a young teenager, or, you know, however we raise our teenagers, they're not always being monitored 24/7. I can only imagine what
that's why I was sent to boarding school. Literally, like, I would have parties at my mom's house, because my mom felt really bad after my parents got divorced, because my dad was very much the disciplinarian, like, over the top disciplinarian. Okay. My mom was the opposite. So she like felt bad and like let me have parties on the weeknights with my older friends. Yeah. Like, we would watch Lost and drink a bottle of Pop-Off.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm a regular mom. I'm a cool mom.
Literally. We would be like, she'd be like, you guys need to leave. She'd be like, you guys need to leave. We'd be like, my friends would be like, Joan, your sweater is so beautiful. Like, we love that color on you. And she'd be like, okay, you can stay for another hour.
Dead.
Love her. She's actually sober now, by the way. She actually has her 500 days on my 3 years in a few weeks.
No way. That's so awesome.
Yeah. We've had a journey together.
Yeah.
But, But yeah, so she sends me to boarding school because she's like, you're going crazy. I can't control you. And I don't want you to ruin your life because of, you know, whatever. So that was like the huge blessing in disguise. And I'm really grateful every day that I had that opportunity. Right. Mm-hmm. But then I go to college and I went to Dartmouth up in New Hampshire. Okay. And I didn't think it was going to be a big party school. I'm like, how crazy can it be? It was a way crazier than I thought. Their unofficial mascot is a keg with a face.
Get out.
Yeah. So, you know, okay. I went crazy. I just partied as much as I could. I started doing, you know, other things besides alcohol also really young. So I had, you know, where I grew up in Connecticut, like cocaine was huge. So I had access to that. And I eventually became a big druggy drinker, like at school. I mean, that was my reputation. I was the party girl. Like if you needed something, come ask me. That was what people knew. And it was touch and go there for my entire college. Like I had to leave twice for mental health reasons.
Okay.
I was assaulted at one point by a friend's boyfriend. I mean, I would drink so much that I would just fall asleep everywhere.
Mm.
Not good.
No.
My friends called it the Rachel pass out.
No.
So,
And just because you fall asleep somewhere does not give anyone permission.
No, it was in my own house too. It was, you know, so this things That's kept happening. Insane. I just always found myself like it was always something. My mom always said that to me. And now looking back, it truly was always something.
Yeah.
I was always behind. I was always, you know, needed extensions. And then I would pull all-nighters. And it was just, it was like, it took me 7 years to finish college. But I did it.
Wow. Okay.
But it was a lot.
Yeah.
And then, so after college, I definitely was drinking way too much at the end. Because at the end, I had gone back. All my friends were gone. I was way older than everyone there. I didn't want to party with the college kids, so I would just drink by myself. And that's when the drinking by myself started. Must have been like 23, 24. Okay. So then I came back to New York and I was so depressed for a year, like barely able to do anything, just like partying. You know, my mom would say to me, she would be like, I think that drinking makes your anxiety worse. I'd be like, Mom, you know what you're talking about. So the only time I don't have anxiety is when I'm drinking.
Right. And then the next morning is a different story.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. I mean, it was horrible.
Yeah.
You know, and I had lots of roommates and all the drama and whatever. I ended up getting a job and it was a really toxic work environment. Everyone just like drank their sorrows away. And honestly, I thought it was normal. I thought it was normal to binge drink till you blacked out, passed out, because that's what everyone around me in college did. Thought it was normal to go out every night after work and get wasted and get home at like 2 a.m. and wake up at 8 a.m. for work or whatever. Like, I just thought that's what everyone else did.
Right. Play hard.
Yeah. It was so dumb now looking back, but that's pretty much how my entire 20s were. My whole 20s were just like drinking every night, you know, going to work super hungover, feeling like crap, and, you know, like the weekends just like laying on the couch, doing nothing or going out, repeat. I really think that I drank my 20s away.
Yeah, same.
It's sad, but, you know.
Yeah, but it also seemed like, for the lack of better words, it seemed normal because everyone else was, I mean, I guess water seeks its own level, right? Like we were hanging out with people who were doing the same things and able to enable the things that we were doing. You know, we can justify and rationalize till the cows come home. But at the end of the day, like water seeks its own level. So if you're not going to level up, you're going to just kind of sink or rise to the level of the water around you.
It's so true. It's so true. And I think that's also why when people stop their habits and stop drinking, why sometimes everyone around them starts pressuring them or starts freaking out, because you surround yourself with people that don't make you feel weird about whatever addiction that you have.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally. Or like whatever relationship that you're just continuing and like probably toxic. And you probably know that. That's why it's like people's response to, you know, if you're not drinking tonight or forever, is always about them. It's the biggest tell. It's the biggest tell. It's hilarious. It has literally nothing about the person who's not drinking. It's all about their, how they take it and their reaction.
So I always think back. So what, there was a time I was dating, you know, obviously before I met my ex, and there was this one guy I went on a date with once in Brooklyn. I was living in Brooklyn and we met at the bar, and I get there and I'm like, okay, let's order our drinks. And he's like, oh, I actually don't drink, but I don't mind if you do. And I thought that was crazy. I remember thinking to myself, like, what the hell's wrong with this person? Like, why didn't I was like, why didn't you tell me ahead of time? Like, I was upset. And I remember, I remember being the person that I now help my clients deal with. And I think back to that sometimes of like, oh my gosh. And it's because I had the drinking problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just crazy how things can change though, because that version of myself would have never in a million years thought that my life would become this like 10 years later, like less than 10 years later. I mean, never.
Yeah.
Funny.
Oh my God. Shout out to that dude.
Yeah, sorry, dude. Sorry, dude. I'm so sorry. I get it now. I get it now. But like, thanks for being something I can now talk about on podcasts, you know?
Yeah. Oh my God. For real. Okay. So what happened? Like, what made you change your relationship with alcohol?
So I went on a trip to Italy with my best friend at the time, who actually was already sober. And she was in AA. And so I had gone to some meetings with her before. Her family's in AA. So like it wasn't like the sober world was something I'd never heard of, right? Like I knew people that were sober, but I didn't care. I was like, I don't need this. So we're in Italy. I got so messed up. And even though she's sober, I was drinking and partying, whatever. Oof. There was one night where I fell asleep in a club in Capri, and she was already back at the hotel, and I had to be carried back to the hotel by random Italian men. And I woke up in the bathroom, and I remember she was horrified, and she was like, we need to talk about this now. And that was the first time I ever said out loud, I think I have a problem with drinking, but I'm just not ready to stop yet. So that was like 2016.
Yeah.
So like, we get home from the trip. And literally like 2 days later, I got fired from my job, the toxic one. It wasn't actually because of anything I did. Thank God this time it was a whole other reason, but that triggered a huge bender and I went crazy. So my roommate has a party, and this guy that I was still talking to from Italy had his friend come by the party. That guy ends up becoming my husband later on. Yeah. So we meet, I become super codependent. I'm like, we need to be together. And he had to go back to Italy because of visa stuff. So he's like, come with me. It's like, okay. So I go back to Italy with this random person that I barely know. And so like a few days into the trip, we get into a horrible scooter accident and I couldn't walk. And so his parents had to take care of me for like a few weeks in Italy. I mean, it was all crazy.
Oh my gosh. But
just this kind of stuff that happened to me all the time. Like crazy things were just always happening.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I want to be with you. Like, we need to make this work. I propose to him and he's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. I come back to the US. I apply for us to get a K-1 visa, like out of 90 day fiance. They say, okay, we get the K-1 visa. He comes over January, 2017. And we had 90 days to get married. Get married on like the 87th day. I didn't even tell my parents, I didn't tell my dad till afterwards. And so now I have this Italian husband and I keep it a secret. And he doesn't really drink. Like, he actually like barely drinks. He's pretty grounded. He's pretty, you know. And so I think that helped me kind of like not go off the deep end for a while, because he was like a kind of a grounding force.
Yeah.
But as we got to know each other better, and I realized that like, okay, I don't think this is my person, you know, but I was kind of into deep, like to go back.
Like a little into married deep.
Yep. And so that kind of, then I was just like depressed and I was like, what did I do? Whatever, but I'm going to try to make it work.
Yeah.
And my drinking just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And so COVID, right before COVID, I was going to break up with him. Mm-hmm. And, but I was scared, whatever. New York City, it's so expensive here. It's like, you have to really have a plan. If you're living with somebody, like what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So, COVID happens and lockdown and we leave the city together and I decide this is what I've been wanting. I have been wanting a break from life because, you know, my sister was getting married. I was the maid of honor. My weight was out of control. My drinking was out of control. I was miserable at the job I had. Like, I remember my eye was twitching at that point for months and like, it didn't stop twitching. It was just not good.
Yeah.
So I was like praying for a break and then COVID happened. And I was like, did I manifest this into reality? Like I really was losing it.
Yeah.
And so I leaned into the drinking. I was like, oh, I can drink whenever. This is what we do during a pandemic. You know, sure. I was eating whatever I wanted. And eventually I became unrecognizable. Like I literally looked in the mirror and I did not know who the person was that I saw. It wasn't just the weight. It was just everything. Yeah. But I didn't know what to do. And I was like, all right, well, I'll figure it out. So laying in we were in New Hampshire. My mom has a lake house. I'm laying in the pool, the lake, drinking by myself with my dog. And a man goes running by. And I remember thinking like, ugh, what a loser running on such a nice day. And a new voice comes into my head that I'd never heard before and was like, he's not the loser. You're the loser. I was like, wait, I'm the loser? And the voice is like, he's bettering himself and like we're running. Like you're literally laying in the lake like a blob drinking all day.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I am. And I was like, well, how do I become more like the man? Like, how do I want to get up and like run and work out and be happy? And I was like, well, he's definitely not drinking whiskey until he passes out on the couch every night. Like that's
probably just, not.
Yeah.
No.
So I remember that was like my moment where I really realized that if I wanted to have any kind of a life that I was happy about or proud of, I had to stop drinking. So that was like June 2020.
Okay.
So we end up getting back to the city a few months later. Eventually, you know, I'm starting to move my body more. But I weighed like 100 pounds more than I weigh now. So it was like a lot. And
that's significant.
Significant. None of my clothes fit me. Like it was bad. So I'm walking as much as I can. Like my sister's wedding has been rescheduled for the third time to October 2021.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I want to get as healthy as I can for her wedding. Like this is time to do this. Like I've been binging all of 2020. Let's see what I can do for 2021. My mom's like, try dry January. Like let's do it together. And I was like, no. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
She gets me Quit Like a Woman by Holly Whitaker for Hanukkah. She's like, Chrissy Teigen was holding it on Instagram. Like, I thought you might want it. Chrissy Teigen likes it. Thanks, Mom. Dad.
Okay. Right on.
So I drink on the first, I drink on the second.
Okay.
The third comes and I have a horrendous hangover and I feel like crap. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I should try dry January. Like, what's the hurt? You know, I'm sick of this narrative, whatever. And so that same day I decided to sign up for Weight Watchers because I had tried to do it before, but every other time I would just like drink my points that you could have. So it never worked. So I was like, if I'm not drinking, then I won't drink the points. So maybe I should just do it all at once. Like
then you got a shot. Yeah.
My ADHD, so all or nothing, you know, I'm like, all right, let's do this. So, so that's how I started. And the first week kind of sucked. Right.
Yeah. But then super uncomfortable.
But then after that first week, there weren't parties going on. It was still locked down. Like there weren't activities that I felt like I was missing, whatever. After that first week, and I started sleeping well and waking up without the hangover, and my body couldn't, like, I would wake up and be expecting the hangover, but then I didn't have it. I was like, oh, I feel amazing. And I remember like skipping around my apartment being like, what should I do with myself now? And so I started going to Central Park because we finally lived walking distance to it.
Yeah.
And I didn't know my way around it at all. Like 0%.
Yeah.
And my anxiety kind of was like, you're going to get lost. Just turn around, just like go to the park, whatever. I keep going on this journey and I get to the end of the month and I feel so good. My anxiety's never been lower. Yeah. I've never had better sleep. I think I had lost like 10 pounds. Just felt like things were changing.
Yeah.
And my best friend, they were.
Yeah.
But as you said earlier, like we surround ourselves with people like us. So my best friend at the time had a really big drinking problem. And I remember we went out and he was like, "All right, ready to get messed up again?" And I was like, "No, like I'm not. I don't want to ruin how great I feel by having a drink. I kind of want to just see how long I can go for." And he was like, "Are you, why?" I was like, "Whatever." So I do. Yeah. And I keep
That's
going.
Cool.
And I kept going to Central Park every day. And my dog, like he's a little explorer. And so he kept trying to push me further into the park. And I was like, no. And so we kept exploring path by path by path until we were walking like 6 miles every morning, like rain, sleet, snow, didn't matter. We were going to be there. And I was like, you know what? I just want to get to the wedding and see how good I can feel. And that was my goal. And I kept going. And at like 100 days, I looked at my ex. We had been fighting. And I was like, this is over. You need to go. We're done. And he moved out a few months later. And after that, I was on my own. And I was scared. But I knew that this is what I was supposed to be doing. I knew I had to go on this journey by myself. I knew I had to kind of like figure out who this new version of myself was going to be, since drinking and partying was like the root of my identity for so long. Then at like 8 months, I think it was like 8 months, I remember I posted something on my old Instagram account that was about drinking. And I had always glamorized it there. And I felt really weird just like continuing to now post sober content. Like, I don't know. It was in this weird between stage. I didn't do AA. So I didn't have any sober friends. I stopped being friends with all my drinking friends and I was alone. So I was like, you know, I'll make an Instagram account. Like I'll just to like hold myself accountable so I don't drink and maybe I'll meet some cool people. I really want to make some sober friends. And that's when I made the account and I called it Sober in Central Park because I was literally, it was very literal. I was sober in Central Park.
In the park. She was every in day. It.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. That is so, so cool. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I think you were actually one of the first accounts I followed. I was looking through my following yesterday. I don't know why. And it's just funny to like see like who inspired us, you know, and who helped us kind of get to this, my dog's barking, get to this like, you know, decision. George.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and now I still, even at 8 months when I made the account, I would have never imagined that any of this would have transpired from an Instagram account.
Yeah.
Never.
I mean, you never know, right? Until you actually do it. Like you just got to do it. You got to take the leap of faith.
Yeah, you do. Like, I mean, and it's scary, but I mean, it was the best decision I ever made in my life.
Yeah. Wow. That is so cool. I love that. That is so interesting. I just thought like, oh, she lives in New York. Like that's, you know, a fitting name, but wow. It's such a story. Like it's such a meaningful, impactful story.
Thank
that's really
you.
Cool. Has the so walking, much meaning.
The walking saved my life. I mean, I just walked and that's how I lost all the weight, was literally walking. It was walking, changing. Yeah. It was just walking, changing the way I ate through Weight Watchers and not drinking. Yeah. I started working out with a trainer at like a month before my sister's wedding, once a week outside on the East River. Just to like, so, but I had already lost a bunch of the weight. It was literally walking. It was crazy.
That's amazing. Good for you, Rach. I'm so proud of you. That's so cool.
Thank you.
Now, like present day, you're a coach, you're helping, you're motivating, you're inspiring other women to also change their relationship with alcohol.
Yeah.
Maybe go for a walk. Yeah. Maybe do something else. Like find these tools, something to find that whatever works for you.
Yeah. And also to just be that person that can tell them there is hope. Like, listen, if I could do this, you can do this. You know, it's not, you know, it's a little bit different now that we're not in lockdown. I do think that that was actually a really big advantage for me because I didn't have the temptations of like the work party, the wedding, the trip, like that just wasn't happening. So I was kind of stuck in that hibernation mode that I think you have to go through when you first stop drinking. But I have in the past few years, I think really learned some valuable tools and ways to shift your mindset. Cause that's what I've realized it all comes down to is how we see situations. Like instead of I can't drink, I choose not to drink. Right. Yeah. Like just even that one little way of it changes how you feel.
Well, saying I can't do something is so, it just sucks the power out of it. It's like, it's not a choice. It's like, I'm willingly like, I can't do this. Like, I don't have the power, autonomy over my own body. That's bullshit. Yeah. You totally do. But we also need to like be almost like our own lawyer, right? And like prove these cases, prove why we should make these healthier choices.
Yeah. So it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
And it also is mindset.
The other thing though is the way we talk to ourselves. Because I had horrible self-talk before any of this. Like I was always beating myself up and I was so hard on myself. Like I'm so stupid. I'm dumb. Why did I do that? Like that's blah, blah, blah. And when so before I stopped drinking, my therapist she's still my therapist. She was like, you need to say affirmations. And I was like, no, I'm not saying affirmations. And I remember her like, I was like, no. She's like, can you please just try? So I remember like standing in front of the mirror and being like, I am strong, like crying, like because I didn't believe these things. And but eventually I kept saying them over and over and over. And then I started like believing them.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh my gosh, the way we talk to ourselves is actually like the most important piece of all of this.
Yeah.
So if we're not kind to ourselves, then we're not going to do things that are good for us. We're just going to, you can't bully yourself into change.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we're basically hypnotizing ourselves either with like negative self-talk or positive self-talk. So you're going to do it either way. So might as well just choose the positive because it's going to work out way better for you. And your therapist bill is going to be way lower.
Totally. And it's like, you know, and then I got really I've always was spiritual, but I never was at, like, you know, I could never, I think, get past a certain point. And so when I stopped drinking, then I realized like, whoa, manifestation is real. Like the law of attraction is real. Like we are frequency, we're energy. We are able to tell the universe what we want. We are able to like raise our vibrational frequency, and that can really happen when you stop drinking. So I became like obsessed with like listening to sleep frequencies all night. You know, I was always like a crystal girly, but like, you know, I've just got way more into the manifest, the spiritual side of everything.
Yeah.
So a lot of my coaching kind of will, I tell people like, if you're from New York, you kind of have to say, this is really woo woo. Go into the woo-woo.
Love it.
And a lot of times I think people just don't even know what they want, and that's half the battle, is even figuring out what do you want your life to look like.
Agreed. Totally. Rachel, one more question for you. To anyone who is listening to us right now, who is maybe thinking of changing their relationship with alcohol or going through the motions, what piece of advice could you offer?
Take that first step. Do not be scared to try. And if it doesn't work out the first time, don't be scared to try again and try again. It doesn't always happen on the first time. Like for me, I don't know why it did. Like I am very grateful, but the majority of the people that I work with and I talk to, it takes a few times. It takes getting back up there and trying either or try something a little bit different, try a different support group, but it's really hard to do this on your own, and you don't have to do this alone. There are like so many resources out there that aren't just AA. And because if that doesn't speak to you, there are other options. So find the one that works for you.
Totally. Different strokes for different folks.
Totally.
Rachel, where can we find you on the World Wide Web?
Find me at Sober in Central Park. Mainly on Instagram. I'm trying to get into TikTok, but it's just, I don't know. It's not for me yet. And Wednesdays for Wellness Wednesdays.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. In the Sober Girl Social Club. Rachel, thank you so, so much for taking your time and sharing your experience and knowledge with us. This has been such a great conversation. So thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
How fantastic is Rachel? And I'm so excited that she has joined our coaching team and a Sober Girl Social Club membership. If you would like to join the membership, head to asobergirlsguide.com to sign up today. Thank you so much for listening. Remember that sharing is caring. If you know a friend, a family member, or loved one who needs to hear this episode or any of our other episodes, please make sure to share it along. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at A Sober Girls Guide and head to asobergirlsguide.com. We got your back at any stage of your booze-free journey. We got you covered. Head to asobergirlsguide.com now. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.